I mean, listen, you've had the same look for the better part of a decade. You've had the same look as long as I've known you. We've known each other for shit almost 12 years.
The only good thing about balding early is you're just going to sit there for a long time.
Let's go with it.
Let's fire this thing off because we're going to start talking trash right from the start.
We're already live.
Are we really?
We're live right now. 7:30 a.m. Morningwood Radio with your guest, the Sheriff, and co-host today, Bracken. How are we doing today?
If you notice down below, I put the old guard because I think Bracken and I may be...
Well, you didn't. You put Goward.
Oh, whoops. I spelled that wrong. There you go. Whatever. That's embarrassing. But I just put that and I was just like, it was trying to auto-correct me and I didn't have time. I was just like, load. But Goward's pretty good too because that just goes to show that we are aging at such a rapid rate. I can't spell anymore.
How are you supposed to spell it? It's a new development. G-A-U-R-D.
Let me get the definition of this. Okay. Definition of guard. No, he's right. It's Goward. We screwed this up badly. This is a bad start to the show. End it.
Just all bring into the table.
Now, dude, granted, to your benefit, the top thing that people ask is, does it spell G-A-U-R-D or G-A-U? I don't know.
So what that does is just puts me right in the middle of everybody else, which I'm comfortable with.
It says top five asked, how do you spell guard?
What were you talking about with Rich Diaz the other day where he couldn't spell the word? He was having trouble doing it. I mean, he's so old, man. I can understand that.
I don't remember. It's an English meaning. It's from the Cambridge Dictionary. You just replace the U and A. We're good.
I'll take it. Dude, I've got so many questions for you, Bracken, because you and I only talk via podcast now.
We talked one time last week. Briefly, and it had been a while. Ryan, is he gone on your end?
Zoom freezed. Yeah. Unless he's messing with us.
He's not that technologically advanced.
I don't know what happens with his Wi-Fi. He's going to call me and tell me that the Wi-Fi is messed up on our side.
He will. It's not going to be his system.
Oh, no. We started over. He's just got to sign out and sign in.
How did you two meet? Because I don't know the origin of your show.
Your Rose. The origin of the show, he started this show with Kemson, and then it was going into COVID. They stopped it, and then he brought me on. And then we continued it. But how I met him was just friends with him over Instagram. I was texting with him on Instagram, and he said, "We're growing the team." And I sent him a DM. And then he said, "Hey, next week in Colorado, we're doing a plan for the entire year of what business plans we have, what we have going on, and potentially you having this job." So I flew out in a 2 days' notice, hung out with he and a couple other guys in the Colorado house.
Was that Durango? Offered.
Yeah. Wait, was it Durango? I don't know if it was Durango. Point. I think it was Boulder. It was Boulder. Okay.
Just like that. Things move quick in Hunter's world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It was. It was literally, hey, this was on, I think I got called. I sent the email and everything with like job history resume on Wednesday. He called me on Saturday. I was at one of the gyms and he called me. It was a random Rhode Island number. And I was like, what is this? So he called me and he's like, yep, next week, set it up if you want to fly out.
Just like that.
And I did. Yeah. I booked a Southwest flight and I hopped my ass out there.
That's the way Hunter's life works. A problem presents itself that he may have never thought about prior to that moment. He solves it in that moment. And then that's just his new life moving forward.
Yeah. Speaking what is his old guard? I guess the old guard didn't have the Wi-Fi set up. Hopefully Alex can help him.
He has people there on site.
I think so. Yeah.
Good.
We had headphone issues and it was one of the settings where we had one of the settings turned off or it defaulted, I think to the old thing. And it wasn't recognizing the new plugins.
It's always an issue.
The old guard.
Oh, and we're live too on top of that? I thought this was just being recorded.
No, it's always live.
Unreal. Well, we have, I co-host two other podcasts, and it is outrageous the amount of times that the first time an issue pops up is like the 15th time you've used it, and as soon as you go live, every time.
We haven't had a Wi-Fi issue in a while. We're doing it live.
Yeah, this is downside of live right here. What do I?
Let's see what we'll call them via podcast over the Rodecaster.
There we go. He's furious right now.
Hey, buddy. We're still alive. If you sign back in, I'll send you the link again. All right, bye. So is this your studio? Just
office,
a wall
full
of shoes. Have you ran in these shoes, or are these the new shoes to be bought?
Every shoe's been running. This is the rotating wall of fame here. Well, shoes of fame, I guess. My favorite shoes of all time in some capacity, and or shoes I'm currently testing out. So these
two, they aren't bolted into the wall. They're just sat on a. Oh, okay. Nice.
Invisibly mounted.
Wow.
The problem is, if I get fired up during a podcast, I knock them down.
Yeah.
But these two were placed here for Hunter. In honor of his new Puma deal.
Puma deal, yes.
Yeah, which is a big moment in our sport. We've had, I think, a grand total of zero athletes signed to a legit shoe deal.
Shoe company. Wow.
Yeah. We've had people.
I didn't realize the scale of this.
Yeah, I mean, we've had people partner in the past. Way back in the day, Reebok bought in as a title sponsor of Spartan Race. And as a result, Hunter, I think Matt Novakovich, I'm going to blank, Amelia Boone for sure was on there. They were on there as Reebok athletes, but it was kind of like, we already sponsor the sport. We're sponsoring the sport via you. And it was kind of worked out with Spartan as well. It's not like the NFL or NBA where you make it and someone signs you to a shoe deal. This feels like the closest thing to a shoe deal we have. And we've had some people with Innovator Salomon, but it's mostly free product, some amount of travel stipend, sometimes a sign, like Reebok had some signing bonus back in the day, but most of the people in this realm aren't getting shoe money. They're getting ambassador money.
Yeah. Well, he talks about how it's like you can go broke doing the sport, and the monies that you would win are on the podium at the biggest stage, not North American championships, not UK championships. It's like the only money you're winning is while you're at national world champions, and it's that final thing. So all throughout the year, you're putting up your own money in order to fund all your training and whatever you need to get going.
Yeah. For a long time, we thought there was some big and like pot at the end of the rainbow waiting for us, pot of gold. And for most people, they came to the realization that that's not it. You have to approach it like a hobby, as in I'm self-funding my pursuit, but this hobby happens to have a few potential paydays down the road. But yeah, it's all like retroactive. If you get it, it's covering in reverse order all your expenses throughout the year. It's not like it sets you up for your next year of training. It's just you got paid for what you had already put in yourself for the previous 6 to 12 months.
So the big top dogs that are running every weekend in OCR, it's more of a, you know, if friends that are help funding that flight, we had the Iron Cowboy on, and he's like, when at the start of it, it was, hey, I'm not trying to find a friend that can finance the whole thing. It's, I have this next flight coming up. Can I possibly use 30,000 of your points in order to book this round trip flight to get to my next competition?
Yeah, I don't know how much. I would say at like the mid-tier ranks, there's probably a lot of that going on. But early on with the sport, there was some sponsor money, but there was a lot of travel stipends being given out. And if
from the company that putting on the event. Okay.
Yeah, early on there was a lot of that. But there was also so many just options for races that you could race. Like you said, the top dogs are racing every weekend. And so you could kind of count on it. Not everyone can show up everywhere. I know if I just go top three, I'll make my travel back minimum. So you're not really overextending too far. But then over time, there's been a huge reduction in the number of events that pay out. Even the Spartan National Series, like there used to be, I want to say the first year I quit my job to race, I think I showed up to 7 or 8 events that all had several $1,000 in available prize money. Whereas this most
combined
recent year,
between those two, no, three
each event had several thousand available. Like if you win, it was somewhere between 1 and 3,000 for first place. I think went to like 7 or 8 of those on top of a few other of the events that paid out decently. Whereas this current year, I think there were 4 events that paid out over $1,000. So nowadays, I mean, I don't even know if we have people racing every weekend.
Yeah. Financially, it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, there is no return on that, really, other than, like Hunter was saying, end of the year Hyrox, end of the year Spartan. It's just, like, you have to train all year for it, which is why I think hybrids becoming such a thing is there was such, it was so few and far between on the big events for OCR that people had to turn to something, like VJ, for example. VJ would have run OCR, I think, for the rest of his life if they kept putting him on TV and giving him 2, 3, 5,000, 10,000 every time he showed up. But outside of that, like that's not available. So now he's going to dabble in hybrid because why not? There's nothing else to really sustain the season.
Oh, here's a good question. No, not that one. I think there was an auto type.
There's a lot of mistakes.
Thoughts on the Puma Deviation Nitro?
Yeah, the Deviate Nitro, I had version 1 and I liked it, but there were some improvements to be made. And that this is one interesting thing about Puma, is that there is some relation to the Reebok experience from early on, but then it's diverged entirely. So they're buying in to or embracing hybrid racing, Hyrox in specific, the way Reebok kind of did with Spartan. But Puma seems to be listening. Puma seems to be making improvements from model to model. So the difference between, for example, this shoe right here.
Okay.
This shoe right here, this is their pro marathon shoe right here.
Okay.
It was a huge disappointment to me in the first one. And I got done running in the shoe and I thought, there's not a lot of super to this super shoe. There's not enough foam. The plate, because the stack is so low compared to the other shoes, it doesn't have room to have a ton of curvature to it. And so you're not getting anything from the plate or the foam. And they came back in version 2 and they did every single thing you would have wanted them to do.
So they're actually listening to their customers when they're like, it'd be 100%. Great if you could have X, Y, Z. Give me 3 months.
Yeah. And Reebok never did that. Puma seems to be making their adjustments constantly. Hunter, I don't know if you were there or not. We had a summit out at Reebok one time. You were probably too big. You're like, I'm not showing up. But we went out there and they sat down in the R&D, the head of the R&D department and a few of the worker bees there sat down with the head of marketing in Austin. They said, all right, tell us all everything you think about our shoes. And we spent like 35 minutes telling them in detail breakdown what we thought, what we liked, and what they could do differently. And they said, all right, fantastic. Now, here's where we're going for the next 3 years. And then they just put up a presentation of all the things they have set in stone for 3 years. So the earliest they could make an adjustment to a shoe model was 4 years from the moment we gave them that piece of advice. Like, well, what'd you bring us here for? They weren't here for advice. They wanted to have industry confirmation that the 3-year plan that they had already set in stone was going to work. And Puma seems to be doing the opposite.
I had meetings. I mean, I have a meeting with the development team of Puma next week. I have meetings with a team that tried to recruit me to be part of their, it's a big brand that's blowing up right now. And they had meetings with me like 6 months ago. to help develop their shoes, and they sent me a couple pairs of their shoes, and they might as well have been bricks tied to the bottom of, like, to shoelaces. They were the shittiest shoes ever, and they're in production now already. And I was like, guys, no one's going to buy these. And they're like, oh, man, this is going to break through. It's the new thing. And the guy actually used to work at Reebok, and that's why I know it was going to be such a fucking – such a flop of a shoe.
Yeah.
And it does suck because the development time – the lead time on me getting supplements is about 12 to 16 weeks, and that's powder. You're talking about, you're going over, most of these people are producing in China, and the amount of time to make all of these units over there, it's 18 to 24 months.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I'm having, I'm excited to have the meeting with them next week, and they said that there's things that may be able to adjust, but it's basically sitting down having a meeting about something that could show up in 2 years from now.
Which is... It's the nature of this, of the industry, but in the shoe industry right now, which has seen exponential growth in several different directions, companies are having to react very quickly to stay relevant. And Puma, to their credit, has done that. Someone messaged asking about the Deviate Nitro. The Deviate Nitro 2 compared to 1 is a much improved shoe. The Deviate Nitro Elite 2-1 is a much improved shoe. They keep making these improvements in a logical manner rather than what Reebok used to do is our sole and our foam is our sole and our foam. And we might update the color scheme or we'll put a new upper on top that is different, but not better.
Teddy, you fuck off. Sorry, it's our dog. He'll just start getting excited and he'll bark at me for like 30 minutes straight because that's his only version of communication. I will say I've been racing in Pumas for 3 years now, and I had no ties to them from a structure of like work or partnership until just recently. They're the best shoe in the industry right now. I tell everybody, if you look at a shoe for High Rocks, at least at the moment, like there was its own independent for road running, their own independent for OCR. But right now, if there's not good grip, there's not good heel lock, and there's not good pressure across the midsole of the foot, I can't race in it. And
yeah, because your heel's going to pop up on those sleds in the second station, and then you're done. Yeah. Then you're spending time kneeling down, tying your shit.
I remember in 2017, I raced OCR WC national championships down in Texas, and mm-hmm. I raced in their version of the OCR shoe. It was like called like the Mountain King or something like that. The Ultra.
Yeah.
And I remember I ran the race. Luckily I won the thing, but the sole of the shoe was, the footbed was so loose up near the toes, but when it got wet, I never had trained in this before, the actual insole, whatever it is, came up behind my foot, started coming out of the shoe. I contacted them and I told them, I super glued the shoes the next day and I ran the next race, and I contacted them and I was like, hey guys, like I just won a national title in your shoe, and I know that this is supposed to be your OCR shoe. I'd love to sit down and talk with you about it. And they're like, no interest. Thanks for purchasing a pair of shoes. I was like, God dang. Mm-hmm. And since then I've never worn their shoes ever again. I told them to get fucked.
They still haven't created a shoe like that. That MT King has been, or King MT has been an issue since its inception, and they just never fixed it.
Yeah. I'm curious, dude, we haven't seen each other in such a long time. Now that we're like the old guard, I want to know, like, what's life like for you now? Like, what's the difference between like fresh, young, handsome, still bald Bracken at 24 versus 34-year-old? Are you 35 now?
36. Just turned 36 this year.
36-year-old, still bald Bracken. Like, what's this new life like? You're now like an entrepreneur. You running podcast businesses, children, all these kind of things. Like, what's life like now? Tell me a little about it. Tell me about your morning routine, your life routine. Where are some of the differences?
Well, you met me, I think, shortly after we had our first child. So my life is not much different from when you first met me. The only difference is that my focus isn't training anymore. When we were doing our thing, that was the obsession. I just thought about you and Hobie and Cody and Isaiah every second, Atkins eventually, every second of every day, the same way I'm sure you did. And that's been replaced with additional children and my own business instead of working for someone else. Other than that, life's the same. Still kids, Lisa, workout.
I'm on the verge of this, so I really want to know what's my life going to look like. So, like, when you wake up in the morning, back in the day, I'm assuming you woke up in the morning, you probably had, like, a cup of coffee, ate, like, a banana or something, and you were just, like, straight out on the trail. Like, what does a typical morning look like for you now?
Now I have days where I'll convince myself tomorrow's a morning workout. Other than that, it's wake up whenever the day dictates I need to. Like, first recording's at 9, I'll get up at 7. School's in session now, so it's get up and make sure kids roll out the door, get them to school, and then start the day. It was all of this life, but competition was like the roof over the top. Everything had to be contained underneath that. And now it's reversed. It's like life is the roof over the top and competition has to fit under there somehow. And that was the thing I was most terrified for, because I started my first sport similar to you, like at like 4 or 5. And then I went through high school and competed in college, and I found OCR within a year, like 6 or 9 months of graduating college. So I never had an interruption in seasons. Yeah. I competed from 4 till I want to say like 28 was when I started getting injured, 28 or so. Hmm. And I was terrified. So for 2 decades, I just sat there and thought, like, what's going to happen when I can't do this? And you see athletes have a really hard time transitioning. And luckily for me, I had 3 surgeries back to back to back in my early 30s.
Yeah.
And so that like forced me to not have competition.
Shut it down a little bit.
And then rather than it happening at 40 and having a midlife crisis, it happened at 30, and I got used to it and kind of got over it early. So otherwise, I think like all of us, I was heading towards a cliff. We've all seen the guys in the industry and adjacent industries that they hang on too long, and it's sad.
Those are my favorite. I call them the bad dads.
It's what it is, right?
Like, I just will never quit. So like, I used to wake up crack of dawn. I always wake up early, but I would be out of bed and like in a workout within 60 minutes, like full on.
And I wasn't a breakfast guy, so it'd be like 15 minutes.
Yeah. And it's full on. Now I wake up in the morning. I look at my phone for a bit. I then get up. I get up and I will walk up here. I'll jump in the pool. I'll have like a really slow morning, and then I'll start my day and run work for like 90 minutes. Dude, I won't start my first workout until 10 a.m. today. That's how drastically my life has changed. And that's still with me, like my centerpiece being exercise and competition. Mm-hmm. And like, I wonder, I don't even know what it's going to be like when I become a dad. I think I'm just going to like sit in the backyard and like pick up stumps and stuff and never really actually work out.
It's weird because for so long, it was like the rigors of starting the day with your first training meant you got your second workout in at the appropriate time. And then as soon as business or family starts up, then there are windows of opportunity for workouts. Like, it makes sense to work out at 2 p.m. today. And that is such a different lifestyle than 6 a.m., 4 p.m., 8 p.m.
Now, have you just given up on the passion of it? Do you like actually still wake up and want to go in there and be like, yeah, today I'm going to do something? Or is it just like emotion at this point?
It ebbs and flows. I'm still as excitable as I've ever been, where I'll watch a race coverage and I'll leave just fired up, and I'll go downstairs right in the basement and work out for 90 minutes because I'm so fired up and I'm going to do this year. And but then like 3 or 4 days later, it's like, am I going to go all in on this? And that's the side I've talked about it a little bit in the past, but I don't know how to do it part way. I know how to be obsessive. And then recently in the last 5 years, I've learned how to disengage, but I don't know how to be obsessively disengaged. I don't know how to be a good dad and father and an obsessive every morning, every evening, go after a goal. So I haven't given up on the passion. It's there, but I don't know how to keep it burning without letting it burn every single thing, because I don't think about anything else when I'm obsessed with the goal.
Did you hit a point in your life where you said, I got to pick one or the other?
Yeah. When we left Colorado, Lisa and I had a 3.5-hour drive back from Breckenridge after that NBC race. I tanked. I had my first race, my worst race I'd ever had. And we were at our
lowest. Was that the one Cody won by like a massive margin?
I'll take your word for it. I was way back on the course. But we were at our lowest point in our marriage. I knew it. She knew it. And we just had a bad long talk on that drive home through the mountains. And we decided to move back home and just like, it's not worth it. Because what we were talking, Ryan and I were talking prior, I'd realized there wasn't this pot at the end of the rainbow waiting for me. Like this $1 million deal wasn't waiting. This change your life, F you money wasn't waiting. And so if I'm going to burn my life down for nothing in return, I'm like choosing that bad dad life that you're talking about.
Yeah,
because I was slowly going to obsolete my way out of the sport either way. Every year, the new people were coming in. When you first met me, there were like five of us on the planet. And by the time I left Breckenridge that day, there were like 15 guys who on any given day could beat me.
Dude, the cameraman, the guy that they were hiring to carry GoPros for us, took second or like third of that race or something.
Yeah.
He was like a construction worker. They're like, hey, you can run fast. Go. And I was
hold
like,
this camera.
Oh, oh no.
Yeah. And now there's like 50 guys, right? I show up to a Hyrox and I was battling for like fifth place. There is no big, great moment athletically waiting for me anymore. And so how do you take a passion and go all in on it when you're used to a certain level of return on that investment? And now the return has to be something else. It can't be predicated around stand on a podium, hold a big check, gain a sponsor. If that's not the return, I don't know how to convince myself to burn my life down to go after that.
So you bring me into my next topic. I really set up some good notes. I'm sorry that the beginning of my day was so shitty.
It's all right. We kept it rolling.
You did? Dude, it's so crazy. Like Malibu is a, what I call a blue chip town. It is high end on the places you can live in the entire world. I think the homes here are selling higher than they are anywhere else in the world per average. And I've been all around the world, and like I was hiking the Appalachian Trail. I had better cell phone service in the middle of nowhere on the Appalachian Trail than I do in Malibu. My internet goes out all the time. This is actually the first time it's ever gone out in the middle of a show, but it's like mind-blowing. I don't understand how we could be at this level of like affluence and still, I don't know, being a dick. Okay, so I got all these questions because I was really curious, because I do think you probably have the best insight of anybody on this, because I've been really questioning recently, like, what is hybrid sport? It's becoming this new big buzz term. But first, I think we should address what was I consider to be, I think, the seed to what is now, which is OCR. I think OCR came in with that kind of military style tactical training and then was turned into racing. And then, you know, there was the very typical Spartan races, Tough Mudders, Tough Guy, OCR, WC. Like there was all of these different kinds of races. And then I think the first time you and I ever saw it was in 2014, where there was that short course championship where we'd like pick up stumps up and down for reps and do like burpees per lap and hoists and stuff. So like they were starting to be like, okay, like let's take a typical race, but then put some repetition in it. And then there was TMX. So before we put the cart before the horse, what do you think's happening with OCR? And is like, if you had to really give it a bet, is it dead or dying?
It's not dead.
It's dead or dying.
I don't think it's dead. I don't think OCR necessarily, well, if you're not growing, technically you're dying, right? You peak and then you slowly die.
And at it's first, not like an asteroid hitting. Right. Asteroid hitting and wiping out the dinosaurs, but maybe like there's like a flu that's going around slowly killing the dinosaurs.
Yeah, like first you go bald, then you get arthritis, then you get some sort of pancreatic shutdown and you die. I think OCR is going bald. Really? I think the top, yeah, for years, Spartan's big thing was we will not acknowledge competitors. We will not
now they're all
talk about them. And as a result, they tried to put everyone out that they could. And now if Spartan is starting to atrophy, die on the vine a little bit, which at least from the sport level, it is, I think they kind of made their own bed where there isn't this fertile ground all around them to support the industry because they were the industry. So OCR certainly is not on good grounds right now.
Do you believe this thing going on in the Olympics in 2028, or is it just like an exhibition match?
I think it's non sequitur. I don't think that it has anything that pertains to OCR. I have yet to have, and I've ranted about this several times because OCR is like the thing I've done with the last 12 years of my life. I'm passionate about this. I cannot get a reply from anyone yet who can tell me with any amount of logic how this helps the sport of OCR. You have Modern Pentathlon, which had horse abuse in their one of their five events. And so they had to get rid of the horse component of Modern Pentathlon.
How did it have horse abuse?
Like with trainers and things like that. And any industry that deals with animals, someone's going to treat the animals poorly. Just like our all sports have human abuse. They had it with horse abuse. Our world took that more seriously than a lot of the human abuse that happens in sport. And so they're like, we can't have horses. We need a new fifth discipline. And so Ian Adamson teams up with Joe and they've decided we're going to put OCR in the Olympics through this path. But it's not. You're taking, there's going to be a 100 meter short course and it's going to be the fifth discipline of an existing Olympic sport. So the only route for an OCR athlete into the Olympics is to become fantastic at the other disciplines of Modern Pentathlon. There isn't OCR. There's just an OCR short course in an existing sport. And no one can tell me an example of when something like this happened where you joined part of a sport and they're like, you know what? You're so cool. We're going to give you your own sport in the Olympics. That path doesn't exist.
I had this conversation with a girl the other day. She was telling me about how her father was disappointed that she didn't have any son. He didn't have any sons. So hear me out.
This feels like a parable is starting.
Yeah. OCR has no sons. So what they're doing is they're finding, they've got a daughter here. They know it's not going to carry on the family name. So what they're doing is they're marrying off their daughter to the best possible suitor. And Modern Pentathlon's very far down the totem pole as valuable suitors, but it's as good as OCR is going to get. That's what's happening right now.
I really like that analogy, except that This isn't the best suitor. They hired a terrible matchmaker.
I have the best guy. You're getting into the details.
But you're right.
We all know that Ian Adamson's is a bucket of shit. But basically, OCR doesn't really have a lot of other opportunities. So what they're doing is they're putting it in with the best opportunity that they can, and it potentially could carry on the family name in some way, shape, or form. It may not be the ideal situation. It may not be under their actual family name, but since there's association tied to it, that's what they're trying to do. And I don't necessarily blame them because I understand, like, they basically have that dart in them, like the trank dart, and they're kind of like running and they know that they're going to go down soon. They're like, we got to get to something.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of what they're doing because they are trying. I mean, dude, I had to give up on the fact that eventually I sat with myself one day and I kept on getting on flights and trying to tell people what I did for a living. And people, like last night, people were like, Hunter's the best obstacle racer in the world. I was like, that's not even what I fucking do anymore. But I'm not even going to try to tell you guys what I do because it's still not valuable enough. Like, I can't sit down right now and tell people I do high rocks and they fully understand. It's getting there. It's getting better. Mm-hmm. It's better than OCR has ever been. But I was just in this situation where I was just like, you're just breathing out oxygen that's being wasted trying to explain yourself. And I had to let go of that feeling knowing that OCR was never going to get me there.
Yeah. Macaulay and I had so many of these conversations. Like, if this thing here just pans out, we have like 3 years left. If they did that 1,000 meter short course at in Dallas 1 year, and then they did one somewhere else and they were sampling it. This is going to be the new path to the Olympics. We're like, all right, we have like 3 years left physically where we could be one of the three best in America at this. This could be our path to the Olympics. Yeah. And then it's like, all right, there's 2 years left. One, now, okay, that's expired. But this next, they kept dangling. This is our route. It's not. Like, the best thing you can hope for is that they hyphenate our last name at this point and all of us die and they carry that for a while. But
You know what the last dying song of OCR was in my book? Was that in 2019, they did that race on the beach, and that's when Nicole Miracle hurt her knee.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of pros come out. Hildervat. And then, like, a month or two afterwards, COVID hit. It was the last song of OCR as I knew it, with, like, big level pros showing up.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple since, but that was it. And oddly enough, I don't know why, but at some point during COVID, I think a lot of it has to do with Nick Bear, this term hybrid athlete started popping up. And
one of the names of his program is the hybrid cut, the hybrid bulk, or something like that.
He's been very good with marketing. I'm happy for the guy. And as I was saying to you before, there was events like hybrid athletics and OCR. And, you know, there's been a bunch of different challenges. There's obviously been CrossFit. And all of a sudden, like over the past 2 years, there's this dominating term, hybrid athlete. And I don't even know what it really means. I made a post about it the other day saying, like, what is a hybrid athlete? Like, who is the hybrid athlete? And I want to know what your thoughts are on it, because, like, you've dabbled probably more than anybody else in all of these things. And I'm wondering if you think that the OCR athlete is now fading off and this new generation, all the same athletes that were part of that pot are coming into this one, which is called the hybrid athlete.
Yeah, this term, the problem is where everyone's trying to use the same word for the thing they're trying to define. Like when it first kind of cropped in to what I was aware of as fitness was with Alex Vieta. He was the first person I knew that really talked about hybrid. He wrote his book, what, a decade ago, maybe more?
Yeah.
Macaulay and I were sitting in Colorado Springs talking about Alex Vieta when we were on a treadmill in 2014.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to put this way back in the day. We had the Apex Project Camp that we were going to get off the ground. Originally, we wanted to title it the Hybrid Athlete Training Camp. And we ran into, that's how we found Alex Vieta, was we were looking for copyright infringements. We realized this guy already has this term. We love the term hybrid, though, because we felt like we were hybrid athletes. We were college runners, but lifelong ball sport athletes. And now we're doing something that combined multiple streams into one. And he's looking at it like people lift, or they do cardio, or they do sports-specific dynamic training. I'm going to train using all three. I'm a hybrid athlete. And now there is hybrid racing, people started calling it, where we're going to compete at multiple forms of fitness. So the problem is we're all using the same word and everyone's right because it meets their definition, yeah. But they're always going to be at odds because we need different words. Like, we've got hybrid sounds cool, but we just need to stop using the word, because Alex wrote a definition for hybrid a decade ago. Our sport has a race definition of hybrid, started 4 years ago. They're always going to be at odds with each other. Like, I don't think it's a winning argument, because we're all arguing correctly, but we're all using the same word.
Well, you're not fitting the definition to what suits what you're doing.
My thing has been lately, I'm not arguing at all. I don't really care what you do to make you a hybrid athlete. I care about what the pinnacle is, because that's where I want to put my focus. And being that we've been through about like 2 to 3 sports deaths in our in our athletic career, I'm on my last leg. And I'm telling everybody, I'm like, stop going to these other events and just focus all in on this. Because if we put all of our energy in one place, we have the best likelihood of it succeeding. And you got events like the Go Ruck Games. You got events like Tactical Games. We have an event called Battle Bunker. Like, I think it's very cool, but those things are like singular events. So they don't really take up that much of a dominating aspect of a season. Yeah, there's Grit Games. There's obviously High Rocks. There's Decafit. All of these kind of things. And it's interesting. Like, I want to know what people really define as the champion of all of them.
Right. And so that's the thing, though, right? You can train a hybrid, which is basically doing more than one thing. I'm an Olympic lifter and a runner. Great, you're a hybrid in training. But hybrid athlete, hybrid sport, implies competition. And the only real form of hybrid sport outside of, I would probably say, like biathlon, triathlon, duathlon, where you're combining multiple types of sport, is hybrid racing, that term we use right now. And yep. So I think what makes all the racers mad is when someone who is a personal trainer and can combine more than one modality of movement says, I am now the hybrid expert. I'm the top hybrid athlete in the world. I'm the top hybrid coach. I saw a Hyrox once. I can train you for it. Wherein the best people in the world are like, I am the top because I proved it on a competition.
The other day I was talking to a girl and she was like, I'm all in on Hyrox. And I was like, cool. And I'm like, where'd you find your coach? She's like, oh, it's such and such. And I was like, cool. She's like, I'm doing the conjugate method right now and such. And I was like, man, who the hell thinks that's a good idea? And the person has no context on Hyrox whatsoever. And it is interesting. I don't care. Like, I own a coaching program.
Dylan just closed the case.
What's that?
Flash back up there. He closed it.
What's that?
They made up of two different things.
Yeah. Combination, two different elements, combination, running and endurance and strength and muscular capacity. Case closed.
That's the definition. Now, that's not the thing that I'm arguing with you guys. What right. is the pinnacle of this right now for people to focus on?
Right.
If that's CrossFit, the definition, what CrossFit's sport very is simple. The pinnacle? Top.
Yeah, CrossFit's very simple. You go to the CrossFit Games if you want to be a top-level CrossFit athlete. You can go to Rogue Invitational. You can go to Wadapalooza. You can go to Granite Games. But I could sit down at the bar with somebody and say, hey, I went to Granite Games. They'd be like, what? I could sit down at the bar with somebody and say, I went to the CrossFit Games. People be like, damn.
Damn, daddy. Our issue is the same as it's been from day one, which is we have a brand that is our biggest event. And then we have a bunch of smaller things that make up the industry. Like if you tell people I'm a triathlete, mm-hmm. I'm a mountain runner, I run ultras, fine. Our whole life we've been trying to tell people I run OCR. What's that? Have you seen Spartan Race? Oh, is that like a tough mudder? Like they have to have that thing they identify it as. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm a hybrid racer. No one knows what that means because you need the big dog in the room. And I think it can be Hyrox. Yeah. I think it should be Hyrox.
It's the reason why I stopped doing all of the events last year, because I just said to myself, I was like, I cannot spread myself out, because if I'm going to be the flag bearer for this thing, I need to put all my energy on one thing. And then hopefully it will be magnetic enough to drag everybody else into it.
If you can't define the competition, it has to be a brand. Like triathlon, everyone knows swim, bike, run. You can have short course. You can have crazy long course and everything in between, Olympic distance. But the concept is sound. CrossFit is undefinable, despite having many different definitions for it. But everyone knows what CrossFit is because it falls under one brand. And that's where hybrid racing is right now. It's like where OCR
I call it fitness racing. I think hybrid racing is the wrong title.
I'd love to get rid of hybrid racing. That's fantastic. Fitness racing is more definitive.
Yeah. So I'm sure, because you have a pretty successful coaching business at this point, when you have somebody come to you, typically like, what's the thing that you'd prefer them to focus on? Do you even care? If someone comes to you and says, I want to do Decafit, like you just like go for it, or are you just like, no, you should go do a Hyrox?
My response to everyone is, I don't care what your goal is. I don't even care if it's dumb. If you come to me with the dumbest goal I've ever heard, I'm going to say, fantastic. What's the smartest way of getting there? So I don't really care what they do. Once they get immersed in it and they feel what an event's like, and then they're like, this is really cool, I like it, then I'll say, what are your thoughts on a Hyrox? And I'll start pushing people towards it. But I don't see it as any different than when people would come to us back in the day and say, I'm training for a Warrior Dash. Like, all right, cool. We're going to prepare for a Warrior Dash. But after that, you should probably try Spartan Race.
Yeah, I got you. Parker's saying that the military has had hybrid performance for decades. So that's it.
I agree
that's
with half came that. From. Yeah, I agree that they've had it for decades. I wouldn't say they optimized it, because if that were true, they'd be winning competitions. And we've had very few crossovers from the military world. Doesn't change the fact that they're monsters at what they were trained to do, but they certainly didn't optimize it.
What were you going to say, Ryan?
At one point, there was a thing called Red Frog Events. And it was like, I don't know if it dove into obstacle course, but it was an obstacle type thing to where you had multiple locations. I can't remember.
Red Frog was a race company, a management company, if I remember correctly. And they ran other races were a part of it.
There we go. That was the first job that I was applying for right out of school. It was like something with Red Frog Events.
Yeah, they're race management.
So being that we're at right now, it sounds like you're out of the competitive side of things. How do you plan on involving yourself in the industry? Is it just from a coaching standpoint, a podcast standpoint? Do you think you will try to become somebody who's like a better version of Ian Adamson for like unionizing this industry? Are you going to start your own race? Are you going to keep up in the broadcasting? Because I think it's really valuable. No, I don't think. I know it's very valuable to have people like you that have been around long enough. Like, you know, the X Games athletes, you know, Tony Hawk, then all of a sudden decides that he's going to get into broadcasting and also becoming somebody who's like, or like a Tom Brady who ends up investing in the sports league or becomes the commissioner or something like that. Like, do you have any goals of doing things in that direction, or are you just like, F it, I'm on my way out?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I believe that if you care about something, you have some sort of responsibility to better it, to improve it. And I care a lot about all of this. However, our sport, one of our greatest strengths and our Achilles heel, starting with OCR, is that it was made up of, it was like a second chance opportunity for everyone as athletes and as industry participants. And so the media was made up of people who weren't good at media. They just were the people that tried it. And over time, some of them became good at media. Same thing with broadcasting. I love talking. I love breaking down the sport, but I shouldn't be a lead broadcaster. If our sport becomes good and big and famous, I should be brought in as an expert on a panel or to help with analysis, but I shouldn't be introing and outroing commercials. That's not what I'm good at. I believe very firmly, which I think you and I are in alignment on, that you should do what you're good at and not much more than that. Like, you should find the things you're good at. And mine is, I'm good because I was a special ed teacher. I'm good at taking a concept and breaking it down to a very introductory, palatable manner and delivering that to the masses. And then I also have a mind for the top end of the sport. So I think coaching, writing, speaking is the place I need to be. I don't belong on a committee. I sampled that on the USA OCR committee and it made me nauseous. I don't want to be a lead broadcaster. I don't want to try to overextend myself. I want to race when it's fun, do doubles, try some stuff from time to time, stay involved in the sport. But I think it's on the information delivery side is where my strengths lie. And I don't want to step outside that just because someone's got to do it. I think that's a losing.
So you wouldn't take the broadcast spot for 2024 High Rocks World Championships.
It depends what the capacity is, what the role is. If I'm there to add quote unquote like, expert analysis, 100%.
Color commentary. I'm not,
color commentary. Play by play.
Play by play.
Not even play by play analysis role. If I'm there to lead us in and out of commercial breaks and set the stage, no, that's a disservice to the sport. You can find someone who doesn't know the sport who's good at that role.
Did you watch the 2023 broadcast?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I don't think that we can accurately talk about it because we're too passionate about it.
What do you mean? Just talk about it. You didn't like it?
I thought the coverage was very good. I never agree with half of the things broadcasters say or do.
They're like, look at the thing. He's down on the ground again. Up, he's up again. God dang, he's fit.
I think we're straddling the line right now between professionalism and grassroots. I think you got to commit to one side or the other. I think you need to get a pro in the booth, and then you get the best person that already exists in the industry to support that pro. Yeah. But we're trying to do a bit of both. We're trying to take the most professional people in the sport, and as a result, they're master of none. And I would include myself in there. I have a specific role I can fill.
This is what happens. So I've talked to you about this a bunch of times, but Spartan Race had Leo and Chad that were the first ever filmers and video producers for Spartan Race. they made content that is still better than the content they have today. Mm-hmm. And they let them go because of their cost. And yep. It was just two dudes. I bet you they probably wanted like $100,000 to $150,000 for the year. If they had stuck with that, Spartan Race would have produced millions of extra dollars worth of sales and sponsorship deals. Would have crushed it. HYROX has been doing the same thing. They give Graham, their marketing person, an iPhone attached to a whatever it's called. What are those things called? A gimbal?
Gimbal.
And they have him chase us. And like it's coming through at like 1 pixel per minute. It's like, dude. It's like framed photos of us doing stuff coming up on the screen. And I don't blame Graham.
He's doing the best with what he's been given.
Graham's an all-star with what he's working with.
I'm just saying, this has nothing to do with Graham. That's why I was trying to preface that. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to take the smallest budget possible and get it the biggest outcome.
Yeah.
We are literally in our company about to hire, like we're having a meeting today. We're going to hire our third media person. And I do not make nearly as much money as HYROX does. But I'm at the point now where I just recognize what everybody has right next to them. Everybody has their phone. And after we're done with this, the likelihood that all of us will probably go on some kind of social media within the hour is 100%. And you, if I can get you to see me, and not only see me, but see me in a very professional view, I'm going to capture you. I could lie to you and I could literally just like make it seem all smoke and mirrors like I'm better than I am. It's all perceived value. So when you have somebody doing this broadcast of us 1 pixel per minute, our perceived value is that we are the cheapest sport and the cheapest result is going to come from that. Yeah. I mean, and it sucks because I see somebody like you and I was like, Bracken, get back in there. Because I want to see it do really, really well. I know that you guys have Race Brain Podcast. You have Running Public. You have like a bunch of stuff. And like, don't let go. I hope you don't.
Oh, no.
I hope you get more invested.
I'm never leaving. It's just at what level do I insert myself as an athlete into the sport? That's all. And I think your point is very valid. We're at this point where OCR got to with this HYROX world, which is live event coverage is the sticking point. OCR, Spartan had it for years. We have to show it live, which is the best way to show sports is live. Yeah. But you can't show live sports on a shoestring budget. It doesn't work. You can do post-production on a shoestring budget because this thing right here, these can record at a very high rate if they don't also have to be streaming it off somewhere. And so you can get great coverage. It's going to have to be delayed by at least a few hours, but we've proven time and time again, everyone's tried it several different ways. You cannot put on a seamless professional live stream without professional equipment, and no one's investing in the professional equipment yet. I'm watching UTMB right now on the treadmill. I'm working my way through CCC. Dude,
they did such a good job. They were flying with like helicopters and drones chasing these guys. And I'm sitting there so furious. I was like, how can the longest and hardest ultra in the world have perfect coverage, yet Spartan Race in a 3 mile course is like,
that's exactly it. They started losing connection at one point. I'm like, oh man, this kind of sucks. And I'm like, no, they're 30 miles into the Alps. Of course they're losing coverage. It's so anyway, they invested, right? Mount Marathon every year up in Alaska. They have a local news chopper they contract to fly up there. And so they have seamless coverage of the entire race. This is a local fun run that's turned into a competitive version.
Dude, it has the best athletes in the entire world showing up. Like,
because they decided to show it.
Dude, I've been saying this forever. If a tree falls in the wood and no one's around, and that also counts when that person's around is dead blind, you're not seeing it clearly. Meaning if you have fucking shitty coverage, no one's going to see it clearly.
Yeah. And COVID gave us all permission to degrade our viewing experience. Yeah. We got into that pattern of, hey, new normal. I'm just happy to have something on my screen. I'm just happy racing's back. But every single business looked at that and said, awesome. We get to slash our production budget because, hey, COVID happened and it was tough on our finances and people expect less out of us. And they've not bounced back from that in our small little sphere here. They just won't commit the money to race day productions.
I think it's getting better. I mean, I know some really big contracts are coming into Higher Rocks. That broadcast that they did at World Championships was the best. My parents were like, I actually watched you race today.
Mm-hmm.
I got to see you run a race. We're so excited.
The coverage was very palatable.
Mm-hmm. So now that we know what we need to be done, what are you going to do about it, Bracken?
Putting me on the spot?
Yeah. What are you going to do over the next year? I know what I'm committing to. Why don't you tell me what you're going to commit to? Let's have a little bit of a little trust circle here.
In terms of fixing the things we just talked about?
Yeah, man. How are you going to help this thing out? How are you going to be a beacon of light in this dark, dark world that we live in?
I'm going to help ensure that everyone becomes the best runner they can be in this sport. I don't think I can grow the business side of High Rocks. I have very little social media influence. I have very little business sense. That's not what I'm bringing to the table. What I'm bringing to the table is out of all the great, good, mediocre running coaches on the planet, I'm one of the single digit few that understand High Rocks, DECA, OCR, mountain running, ultra, triathlon, trail, that mix that all combines into hybrid. And the single most important trait still is running. And of all the High Rocks, all the DECA, all the hybrid sports, I'm one of the few, I would say single digit, who understands running at the highest level. I'm not saying I'm the best out of anything, but of those two concentric circles, not concentric, but those overlapping circles, I am the slice in the middle.
Venn diagrams.
Venn diagram, if you will. I'm in that overlapping slice that understands running and understands how it applies to this sport. And so while you guys work on the optics and the business, I'm going to ensure that everyone can show up and run compromised on race day.
Okay, so as a visionary, let's just say you're going to play that role. If you were going to give advice for an athlete that was stepping into the sport right now, what would you tell them to invest in?
Their quads.
Their quads? No, not necessarily.
I think pushing off the ground with your quads is the single most important skill after running for High Rocks.
I know what you're saying. I had this conversation with Rich Diaz the other day since we're in this. I was telling him, he goes, you shouldn't be cycling as much. And I was like, that's wrong, Rich.
Quads.
Yeah. I was like, that's wrong. He goes, ah, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, you have lab science. I have field science. And I was like, I have the past 5 years of me running High Rocks, and I can show you one-to-one with the amount of bike volume that I put in every year versus the amount of run volume that I put in. The years that I'm lower on bike volume, I don't have that great of results. Last year, I came off of an Ironman, which I was doing tremendous amounts of bike volume, and then I started to get into paddling. I took a little bit of time off, and then I just knew immediately, I was like, I'm too heavy. I was at 216 when I started last season. I was like, I'm too heavy to start running. I'll hurt myself. So I just started biking like crazy. Mm-hmm. And I had the world record within less than 8 weeks.
You asked me something else that someone asked me, I think last week, like if you could have one thing for High Rocks. He asked if you could only train one single station, what would you train? And you're asking if you could invest in one thing.
Yeah.
I don't think the answer is, I can't answer one station. I guess I would say a sled.
I can.
But honestly, this I don't know if I can answer. Okay, I want to hear your answer. What I'll say is if I had one piece of exercise equipment other than a barbell with unlimited plates, it'd be a Rogue Echo bike, an assault bike of some sort, even though it's not High Rock specific. But for one High Rock station, either the rower or the sled.
Skierg, I think your greatest indicator and potential of your, the biggest indicator of how well someone's going to do in a High Rocks is a 10K run and a 5K Skierg.
Wow, I wouldn't agree with that. On face value, I want to hear more about it though.
Beat my time.
Well, that's never a valid argument.
Not for you. I'm saying other people.
Okay, I'll give you my counter to that. Yep. So Matt Gross is a guy that Kirk and I knew from college. He ran in our conference. He was a 4-flat miler, 147, 800 meter runner.
You told me about this dude.
He transitioned and he got into the Ergs big. He's 6'3", I want to say. He competed at 165. He became a age group national record holder for ski erg and rowing. Got to the point where at 165, he rode either a half or a full marathon at like 150 something. He's a really, really good ski erg and really good at running. And yet he got decimated. He had a 29-minute sled pull his first high rocks. So all I'm saying is that
there's outliers.
The athlete coming in would dictate the piece of equipment I would tell them to buy. Him coming in, I would say either a barbell or a sled. You coming in, I would probably say like a manual treadmill and just like make sure that you're always running well, or a skier or whatever. I can't call it for one faceless person.
Okay. So there are the outliers, and I've had this conversation before. Sometimes you take the fittest people on earth and then you give them something to do athletic, and it could even just be functional fitness, which is a certain degree is athletic, and they just can't do it. There are those people right. that you could just put them on a bike like Ryan Atkins and he will produce more watts than almost any other human being on the planet. And then all of a sudden you get him to do functional fitness and he just doesn't handle it well. He just doesn't. And I'm not insulting Ryan. I actually think Ryan's got like the greatest ceiling of almost any human being I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And
he's engine based, not movement pattern based.
Yes. And your buddy's movement pattern based. He just doesn't know how to get into the sled. I bet you I could probably strengthen him up a little bit and get his positioning done and he'd be in a better position.
Well, we're going to find out in Chicago in a few weeks.
I'm sure he's going to do tremendously well. I mean, like once you have that engine base, so like I do almost all of my studying off of Bjorn Dialli. Mm-hmm. Bjorn Dialli is only a couple inches shorter than me. He's like 6 feet. I'm about 6'1.5 to 6'2". Depending on the day of squats, but I basically just study this guy and it's very hard to find information about him. I'm always just like online trying to buy old ancient books and training manuals and find out about his coaches. That dude had the highest VO2 max and the energy systems and exchanges that these guys use is the closest thing you'll find to a Hyrox. And the time domain that they're doing, like the 10K or the 50K, things like that, the 50K is close to a Hyrox. So basically.
I don't know about that.
What's that?
Even their marathon ski is much slower than a Hyrox.
I think it's like an hour and a half.
For a 50K?
Hold on. Let's just see here.
I don't want to get bogged down in the weeds. There's some skier out there who's going to be like, well, that's wrong. So I'm going to discredit everything we say. Cause that's what I would do to a skier if they got their running times wrong.
I don't know what I was reading. Hold on. We got the paces here. What are the paces? 30K. Well, it's not giving me times.
Good cross country skiers can ski at or slightly faster than good runners could on equivalent terrain.
Well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I was pulling in a different metric.
Doesn't matter. I love the idea of
154
of Nordic sports crossing over to hybrid sports.
Yeah, it's 154. Okay, so but I just think that basically that chain and the running. So let's just say all of a sudden you find somebody who does a 10K in like 33 minutes. And then you get somebody like me who's skiing at about like a 16 something for the 5K. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you're probably going to take that same dude that you're talking about. And I bet you his 10K is probably closer to mine. I don't know, between 33 and 34. And I bet you he's probably, because he's so much lighter than me, he's probably in the 17s. But it's close. But then all of a sudden, if you take somebody like Toby, who won a couple years ago, I bet you Toby's 10K is 34 to 35. And I bet you his ski is like 18 plus. And all of a sudden, I bet you Ryan Kent's probably got a close 10K to mine, but I bet you he's about a minute off of me on the ski erg. It's about wattage. Mm-hmm. At least just my opinion. And now we're getting into the weeds on things.
Well, I think it's equally about what you can put out, but more what you put out after you put out. Like if I had a test, it would be run your 5K or your 10K, sure. But now I want to see, give me any one or two high rock stations back to back and then run a 10K time trial. And I would say that that percentage that you would keep of your pre-fatigue 10K is your biggest indicator of high rocks. Like, sure, someone might run 35 minutes in a 10K and ski, let's say they ski a 320,000. All right, ski a 320,000, then run a 10K. And whoever stays the highest to their previous clean 10K, that's going to be your world champ. Like, that's your world, right? That's Ryan Atkins' world. That's Rylan. That's Kent. You know, Kent was a child prodigy, but as an adult, he's not a sensational runner, but he can run sensationally fast when he's really tired.
Did Rylan just set the Decastrong world record?
It looks like it by like 35 seconds or something.
That's super interesting because
he's injured and he's been living on machines.
Really?
Nah.
Okay, so somebody comes in and they're like, I want to be considered the best hybrid athlete in history. What do you push them towards?
You got to be in the biggest pool. So it's, you got to start with high rocks.
Interesting. Have you raced Decafit?
I did a strong. I did two fulls out of a gym, but never at an event. So the only event I've done is a strong.
Interesting.
Here's what I think. To be the best hybrid racer in the world, you have to have a bulletproof resume. And since yours includes every single adjacent event there could have ever been, everything from Broken Skull to High Rocks to you haven't done a DECA, but you did the strong version or whatever at Spartan Games, to Spartan Game, all the goofy game, carnival game stuff. You've done the High Rock, the Spartan short course, and you're also the world champ in High Rocks with the world record. Like, you've checked all the boxes there are, and you keep checking the big boxes. So for someone to become the best, they have to win a world championship at the biggest, most legit pool. And then you've got to also branch out and do the others.
Okay, so if you're going to do the triple crown for a season, what do you think the three most important events are in hybrid sport? You got Decafit, High Rocks, Go Ruck Games.
I don't care about any game-based sport. I shouldn't say that. I care about them. I don't think they apply to competition.
What do you mean game-based sport?
Go Ruck Games?
Randomized fitness tests that aren't something that aren't in some sort of standardized format or weren't released in advance or you didn't train towards, like, these we're going to surprise you with either what the event is or how it's scored.
So you don't care about the CrossFit Games at all?
Well, I care about it, but I don't care about it in the question you ask, which is greatest hybrid athlete.
Okay,
if you want to be the greatest, I don't think you can have randomized scoring or event participation prior to it. And there's probably an argue against that, but these multi-day competitions, I don't think factor into my personal equation. I would say High Rocks probably. I mean, you have to include DECA, but I think DECA Strong would round it out better. Something short and powerful, something long and arduous. And then the full DECA Fit, which is that middle ground, that 30-ish minute terrifying red zone. I'd say those would be my three: Strong, Fit, High Rocks. What would you say?
I mean, it'd be almost impossible to get into the CrossFit Games, but I think it would be amazing to be included. If I could get another wild card in, if we could all get wild cards in and have that one weekend, High Rocks World Championships one weekend, and I don't know if I would use Decafit. Like, I shit on Decafit all the time.
Have you felt one yet?
Deca shit?
No, I haven't competed a full fit, but like I said, I've done two full DECA fits out of a gym setup.
Mm-hmm.
They're legit competition. You can take yourself as far into the red in a full DECA fit as any competition I've ever run.
Yeah.
They are legit competitions. It just sucks they came around right after High Rocks. Like, oh, we'll make our own. So like they were immediately they felt like a ripoff, but they are a legit competition.
Interesting.
I think like we're forgetting something. Conor McGregor has created his own
it's hood rat stuff, dude. That's hood rat stuff.
It's snake oil salesman is what it is.
Yeah. He's cashing in.
He has the worst engine in MMA right now, and has for the last 5 years, and he sells a fitness program.
It's because he's so busy being on Lamborghini boats, and I respect that. I would be on a Lamborghini boat too. He's set for life. God damn it, I picked the wrong
sport. Proper 12, man.
This is driving me nuts. I am so pissed at my parents all the time. I tell them, I'm like, you fucked up.
The CrossFit Games are an interesting competition because I think they're a terrible test of who the best CrossFitter is, but they are a fantastic test of maybe who the best all-around strength-based hybrid athlete is. Because they test everything under the sun, and it is randomized, and it is unseen and unknowable and whatever other buzzwords they throw at it. So yes, if you could take everyone who's ever considered themselves a hybrid athlete and threw them into the CrossFit Games, if you took out a bit of the outlier events, the things that are just so crazy heavy or so crazy dumb, or even just left them in there but weighed everything equally point-wise, which they currently have, that might be the best possible test for a hybrid athlete is the CrossFit Games. You have to run, usually have to swim or bike. You have to do a machine. You've got to be able to do Metcon work. You've got to be able to be strong. That is the testing field for it.
Yeah.
You just can't get there.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard. I was just disappointed, at least from my standpoint. Like the year that I went, they implemented the cut system. Mm-hmm. That was a bitch. I don't know. I think GORUCK is a pretty cool event, but
very cool.
I don't know if it tests things well enough. So I guess I would have to include HYROX, Decafit, and then GORUCK right now. At least when I went to GORUCK, it was a very, very hard and very well designed challenge.
And that's the thing. They're great challenges. If they took GORUCK, then posted it and said next year it's the same, everyone show up ready, I think that'd be a great test.
Yeah.
But are we testing what you innately build in your training? Be ready for all things at all times. Is that the test of a hybrid athlete? Maybe. Or are we testing how good can a hybrid athlete get at a singular style of test, which is always more impressive.
How did you feel about the Spartan Games?
It was great entertainment. It was a great challenge, but what I always, people who listen to our show are probably sick of this, but I always ask, what are we testing? The best blank. HYROX, at least, you know, you're the best at HYROX.
Yeah.
All these games, when I said games or challenges, they're not really a competition and or a sport unless you can tell me what you're the best at if you win it.
It's really interesting. So I'll give you some data points. Mac took third at the GORUCK Games, mm-hmm. and then he went to Spartan Games in the same year, I think, and he came dead last or second mm-hmm. to dead last. And then you had Christian Harris, who's gone to the CrossFit Games, I think only on team, who's a freak. Love the guy, but he was my roommate. He got annihilated. Annihilated. I think he came second to last and everything. And Megatron was another girl that was on his training team, and she got crushed too. And I think she's a CrossFit Games individual even. And it's really interesting how you take those people and put them in just a little bit of a different skew of programming, and they're done.
Yeah.
Just done. And like we did the dead ball to over shoulder, and Christian, who should have been the guy who won, got knocked out first round. Mm-hmm. Like Atkins was ahead of him. Yeah. Atkins does not have the same kind of posterior chain or just like responsiveness. But at that point, these guys have just been dragged through the dirt so hard.
Right.
It was crazy.
So if you can't tell me in one well-organized sentence what the champion is the best at, I don't consider it a sport.
Yeah.
Then it's a competition or a challenge or a carnival games.
It's tough, man. Like, I intentionally didn't go to GORUCK Games this last year, even though I would have loved to, because I recognize, I'm like, if a tree falls in the woods, no one's around, does it make a sound? Nobody will ever know what I did at GORUCK Games. No. And
they also won't know what they're using to judge if the tree fell or if it hit the ground or how loud it hit the ground, because no one knew what the scoring system was.
I have a bigger reputation for falling on my face at the CrossFit games than I do for winning High Rocks three times. So it's one of these kind of things where it's like, with the time that we have left, what do you do? And I also do, like you, I do care about this environment. Like, it would be, I would be super disappointed if the day that I left within like 12 to 18 months, everything collapsed. Not saying it was based off of me, but I would want to do everything in my power so that like 10 years from now, like I was just, we had Mark Allen on the podcast. That guy won in 1989. And from then he won like five or six more Ironman World Championships. That dude still gets to tour around. Like, they just had an Ironman championship this last weekend. He still gets to tour around and keep on being involved in something that he did 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That would be dope. Like, I would love to show up as old man Hunter at competitions with all these buff young dudes and chicks just crushing it and be like, yo, I'm the OG. And I would love to help you out, whether it be coaching, mentorship, give you some free supplements, whatever the heck it is. Like, that I do want to make sure that we focus on and get it to the next level. And that's why I'm calling all the old guards, like including yourself, to try to find out what's the next best thing to do for this industry.
I think at the end of the day, for any new enterprise, you've got to hitch your car up to an engine, right? Like, you've got to eventually just get behind and stay on one track and go with it.
Yeah.
Like, Mark Allen was Iron Man.
Yeah.
What are you? Like, what is Hunter McIntyre?
At this point, High Rocks.
Are you High Rocks?
Yeah.
And then if you are High Rocks, then High Rocks has to be like the industry standard, which I think they can be. And I think they're progressing towards it. But maybe they have to leave the hybrid term behind and just be High Rocks. Iron Man doesn't make sense. It's not.
I got a question for you, Bracken, though.
Yeah,
we're seeing more and more cities pop up that are hosting High Rocks. Do you think that will hurt or help the sport? Obviously, it will help it in the fact that it's name recognition. But with all these cities hosting a High Rocks, do you think that will drive up the price, which then will make, because they're transporting all the stuff to city, and they're adding more and more of these to where it'll drive out people because the price will be too high. And then they're having all these cities, but no one's showing up to them because they've price driven themselves out. Or some factor to not allow a lot of people to show up.
I don't know their back end of how, like, if they have regional hubs and they ship out, or if they just contract out like CrossFit Games does and they just say, hey, we're buying 50 rowers right here and then we're going to sell them when we're done. I don't know how they source. My take is that what High Rocks did is they solved the biggest issue Spartan ever had, which is access. It's proximity. High Rocks can take place in city center or anywhere you want, where Spartan, to get their gnarly, awesome terrain and parking and cheap fees, it had to be out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And you immediately discount or cut out people who would might maybe want to go there. So I think as long as High Rocks is showing up at a city, it's going to, people are going to buy it.
Dude, the interesting thing is that there's a certain size where there's too many people there, and they've gone way over it. Like, they have us at the London Excel and there's 12,000 people competing in November. I bet you that is going to look like a lazy river. Like, it is going to be such a mess.
Oh, on the run track.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's going to look like Porter's when you took off the line and just shoulder chucked somebody because they're literally standing in your way.
When Tom and I set the world record, I was pushing people just like boom, boom. Like, the fast lane was basically a snail trail.
Yeah. And it's a problem, and it's a great problem to have. And they can solve that by just getting bigger venues or changing their venues. Whereas on the OCR side, how do you solve the problem of people aren't showing up anymore? So the fact that they have hordes of people, I think it just says that you can keep coming to big cities. There are so many big cities left in the world that they haven't touched that they can keep, even in the US. But there's countries still, major first world power countries that don't have one yet.
They need to go to South America. They need to go. They're already North crushing Korea. Asia.
Yeah. Morocco, Monaco. Like, follow the big sporting events. Morocco, Monaco, like, of the Grand Prix races. Go to some place like, well, I guess you have Germany now, but we need.
They have the World Championships in Nice, where they just had the Ironman World Championships. They obviously have business affiliations through there. I think Nice as a city is not that great of a city, but what are you going to do? I mean, it's beautiful. It's right on the water. But
you should do Budapest.
Booty? We're going to go to the booty?
Yeah, I think they should. They just hosted world championships for track and field, and it was awesome. And the city turned out, the city lined the marathon course. I think if you show up to watch a marathon, you deserve another sport in your city. You've earned it.
Dude, we when we did the Copenhagen Ironman, they were had to have been, I think, over 100,000 people, just off the charts. Everywhere you went, thousands and thousands of people for miles. It was wild, crazy. I was just so, it was the only thing that kept me going was these big Viking women.
It's one of the things, not Viking women, maybe that, but that gives me the most, it gives me the most optimism about High Rocks making it is that they're not US centric. They don't need the US's weird flighty attention span to keep them going. If you can lock down Europe and the rest of the world, those people love sports, and they love sports that we don't have attention spans for. They line it for Ironman. They show up for soccer. They love track and field. Eugene hosted track and field, and they're Eugene, Oregon, which is supposedly the mecca of track and field in America. Yep. They could not get people in the stands. Budapest hosts it, and it was sold out. Everything sold out. So if you're a European fitness company, you're going to make it.
I'm not going to race in the United States at all. I'm only going to DC. I gave up on the United States. Like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. I still think the races are cool here. Like, I love the Navy Pier setup.
Navy Pier is a great venue.
Such a good venue. And having the hotel on site is awesome. But Europe's where it's at for the sport. And that means it's going to have longevity.
Barcelona was electric, dude. It was crazy. And I bet you, if I had to guess, the best venues are going to be next year are going to be Asia, UK. I'm going to race Vienna.
I bet Australia is going to be great.
Yeah, Australia is going to be a fucking blast. I'm going to go party my ass off down there. I'm quite excited, dude. We've got a bright future. So, you know, I was going to ask you this one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't typically not raced as much as I used to back in the day. And now I watch people like Christian Blumenfeld, who seems like he's racing like every other weekend. These guys who are in the PTO league or whatever it's called for Ironman triathlon. It seems like they're racing twice a month.
But look, like,
what was that?
Blumenfeld and Eden both kind of tanked at the end of the year.
They're
cooked.
If I had to guess, these guys are probably getting paid about $20,000 to $50,000 every race that they go to, with appearance fees and sponsorship bonuses. So, you know, you do that 10 times a year with your other contracts. I bet you they're 7-figure guys. And I think that's why they're doing it. What do you think the perfect amount of races, if you were going to go through a season, would be?
I think the older you get, the less. And I've also been a big build kind of guy. I think you probably have some of that as well, where a good long build ensures that you arrive with all systems primed. Now, the more of those you do, the more you can branch off and come back and tighten up in 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 10 weeks. But our sport's weird in that we've never followed the guidelines of the endurance industry. Like Spartan Race, the beast distances took 2 to 3 hours, which is a marathon, and top marathoners race twice a year, three times a year. We never really followed that. So I don't know what the rules are for hybrid, but I think like 5 to 6 really good races a year is probably the sweet spot.
Nice. That's kind of my season.
Yeah.
Kind of my season. Trying to figure it out though. I also put on my race season this time. I was like, I may not show up to any of these, even though I put it out there. And I also may quit in them if I want to. Did that one that I quit during Anaheim got me more.
You got so
shit.
Much shit.
Everyone's like, fuck you,
he
Hunter.
He can't finish it anymore.
You're a piece of shit. You're a piece of shit. Quit. You're not. You're like, wow. People are so ornery.
I had the most non-committal take after that when we were predicting the High Rocks World Championships. Basically said, if he loses, it's because he dropped out in LA and he's like used to getting beat now. And if he wins, it's because he went out hot and dropped out in LA and found out exactly what he needed to find in terms of riding the line. So I didn't take a stance at all, but clearly it didn't hurt you.
Well, you got to push up against the line. Nobody's doing that. I want a 52.
You can't know your exact cracking point if you don't crack ever.
Yeah. I also ate chia pudding before I went out there. It made my stomach really hurt. Huge mistake. Huge mistake.
What was the scenario?
Alex, I kept texting Alex like, dude, did he tear an ACL? Did he blow out his knee? What happened? Did he slip on the water on the track? And then I had your dad texting me. He's like, what happened to Hunter? I was like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
To me, it looked like I've never seen someone run that aggressively in my life in Hyrox. It looked like you just went out at a pace that was either suicide or glory, and you died. And that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, we tried to set a world record pace every single weekend for like 6 weeks straight. And then I was like, I'm just going to go into this race and then taper. And I just had overdone it. Because the week before, we did a Hyrox with mile repeats in between. And I was holding 520 to 530 the entire time at 5,000 feet. And I was like, bitch. Wow. I was like, I'm ready.
That's interesting. It's so we have this thing coming up called Night School with mm-hmm. the Running Public. We're going to do like a continuing education course for adults. The first course is on compromised running. And that's one of those things, as you look back, the longer the run interval, the easier the hybrid event becomes.
Yeah.
Someone's like, I did a Hyrox with a 5K in between everyone. I'm like, that's easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, your lactic acid eventually will flush out of the system and you can get back into the next movement, not as overloaded.
If you suck at running, it's not easier, but if you're a good runner, it's just time to recover.
I would just go up. I went up a little hill and then came back down. By the time I came back in, I was just a piston.
At 5,000 feet, that's pretty solid.
It was good, dude. It was the best season I ever had. Interestingly enough, I think I'm in the wrong position right now. I lost a lot of weight and I got a parasite not too long ago. And then I was down to like 185. Really? Now I'm back up to like 207. And I literally walk around. And if I like run into the wall, the house shifts a little bit. Like I'm thick right now. I'm sturdy. And I need to start bringing that down. I'll probably
that's
have
way it. Better than having to put on 15 out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's a blessing and a curse. Like Tim Winnish is a very, very talented athlete, but that dude needs 10 pounds on his body ASAP.
It's been interesting watching Dylan pack on ounces throughout the years. He's starting to look like a really put together athlete this year.
He's got a Dylan? Kind of a fun competition thing going on. I don't know if it was like losing of a bet, but
yeah, it was our fantasy football league. We have an OCR hybrid fantasy football league, and whoever took last had to do a deca fit with a hot dog at every station.
Does he get Dylan, to put condiments on it, or is it just a raw hot
you
dog?
Do whatever you want.
Water.
Do whatever you want.
Hybrid raccoon.
Yeah. So, anyways, he's doing the deca dog this weekend. He's got to do a full deca fit and eat a hot dog at each station. So 10 hot dogs.
Ooh.
That's a rough day.
That's a rough day at the office.
I don't even know if I can find him on Instagram. Oh, yeah, the hybrid raccoon. Dude, that guy, when I stand next to him, smells like his body is dying. Dude.
Is this like a...
It's a true thing.
Stand next to him at the start line and he's already all musky from his warm-up or what?
No, truly. I think he's super overtrained. I offered to coach him a couple last season because I wasn't racing, and I was like, I'll help you, but you have to stop training so much because you can smell the ammonia coming out of his body because he's just moving so much that he's breaking down muscle tissue, and it smells like under a bridge, like pee. And that's
you never happens. Know what you're going to get under a bridge.
No, well, if Dylan Scott's there, I do. Fuck it. It stinks. And I've said it to him. You got to understand, if I was him, I'd be cranking aminos all day long to get that muscle tissue in a healthier spot and start eating more carbohydrates. Probably doesn't eat enough.
Builder Boa Blast.
Dang right, dude. Well, dude, I had a really good time hanging out. I'm going to keep on leaning on you because I think this is going to be the most interesting season of our lives. I think opportunities are going to pop up at a way more rapid rate than we are used to because the sport is so global. And each and every single market is independent in what they want to start to serve. So a lot of cool opportunities around the horizon, my friend.
Well, I'll flip it around on you for getting out of here. Final thought. What do you want from me over the next 12 months? You seem to have this vision. What do you want from me over the next 12 months, Hunter?
You?
Yeah. You ask me what I'm going to commit to. What do you want me to commit to?
I think you need to step into the role of being a bigger voice in the education of the sport, representation of the athletes, and like the knowledge of the season. Because right now, You've got Matt B. Davis, and I like Matt B. Davis, but I think Matt B. Davis is not the person. Like, Matt B. Davis is doing 20 different things and all of them at a decent level. You could do a couple things very, very well. And I think you look at other people, there's like the Rock Zone podcast. I think those guys are like fun, comedic dudes, but they're not the voice of like reason and intelligence that I'm looking for. And then you've got The Rock's Life, which is more like you. But I think that you have a better education, better background, and a better relationship with the athletes. So, like, if you look at the sport of CrossFit, they've built stars out of something that had no star power.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. That's what we really, really need. And I can't, I'm not the kind of person that can go and call all these other athletes and tell them what to do, because partially I'm competition with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my place. But you bring them on your podcast, you guys doing content together, doing the best thing that you can do. I mean, it's going to take investment of time and money, but I think the kickback will be massive. I mean, I've seen multiple people launch high five figures to low six figure coaching businesses literally in the past 6 months off of Hyrox.
Right.
It's insane. Like, literally, like, oh, I've never done a Hyrox before. Oh, I am making a shit ton of money and now I'm a Hyrox coach. I ran one. It's crazy. I mean, there's just, you know, like when you go to an apple tree and there's just like all the fresh apples that have just like dropped on the ground before everything, all the other maggots have got to them. Don't let the maggots get to the apples.
Okay.
And I think you need to get in there and stay there. And I think you also need to focus primarily on Hyrox, not because I'm doing it, because I think it is the beacon of hope.
I'm sold.
Like, do you remember when we went to Warrior Dash World Championships and we were covered in mud after like a freaking $100,000 cash prize purse?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year it was gone.
Yeah.
The whole sport was gone.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen here. But it could if people are sloppy.
Don't be sloppy.
Don't be sloppy, brother. I've had such a good time hanging out with you, man. When do we see you again?
I will be at Hyrox Chicago.
In November 10?
11-11.
Or no, November 11th. I just signed up. I'll see you there, bud.
All right.
I may or may not show up.
I'm going to be running men's doubles.
Oh, me too.
I've never lost a doubles competition, Hunter.
I'm not.
Who's on your team?
Anything out there that
Jack Bauer.
I could compete with you.
That's like carrying around a sack of potatoes. You're in trouble.
A very pale, strong sack of potatoes. Callie and I won the first year. Rich Ryan and I won last year. Michelle Aiken and I won Orlando. Now Jack and I are going to try to hold it down.
Dude, I'm excited to see whatever comes up. I appreciate you coming on, brother, man. It's always good seeing your face.
Thanks for having me. Good seeing you, gents.
Sorry about the issue in the beginning, dude. See you guys. Over and out.
Later.